The Green Sun Show is brought to you by CEA Technology, a leader in building indoor growing systems that allow you to grow pesticide-free and conserve fertilizer, water, and energy to grow crops sustainably. Visit CEATECHN.com to learn more.
One or two? Do you see better with one, glasses, or two, LASIK surgery? I trust my eyes to the Northwest Indiana Eye and Laser Center, located in Valparaiso, Indiana. The state-of-the-art office and surgery center is the best in the region, providing complete eye care, including exams, glasses, and eye surgery. To make an appointment, call 219-464-8223. That's 219-464-8223. Or visit their website, nwindianaeyeandlaser.com. Trust your eye care to the best. And we thank the Northwest Indiana Eye and Laser Center for their support. I'm Robert Colangelo, and this is GreenSense, where we bring you eco-innovations that are changing your world. What do all major cities have in common? They are located at or near a source of surface water or groundwater. Water is a critical resource to support life and the operations of cities. And it has many uses, including drinking water, irrigation water for agricultural purposes. It has many industrial uses, and of course, for transportation. The more water is used and reused, the higher chance that it will have impurities or toxins in it and impact its quality. Also, if it's overused, it can become scarce and not available. Chicago is quickly becoming a water hub, a place where government, academia, and industry are working together to develop new innovative technologies to better manage our precious water resources and stimulate the new blue economy. We're happy to have Dr. Brian Chaplin, professor of chemical engineering at the University of Illinois Chicago, to tell us about the Great Lakes Renew Program and his research with PFAS, better known as forever chemicals. Brian, welcome to the Green Sense Show.
Hi, Robert. Thanks so much for having me today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. We've covered the topic of PFAS before, but it's always good to get into it. And we're really happy to hear about the recent activities with the Renew program. So let's talk a little bit about UIC, the Renew program, and then we'll get into your PFAS research.
Okay, sounds great.
So the University of Illinois Chicago, or UIC, is part of the University of Illinois system. It was founded in 1965 as an inner city college on the near southwest side of Chicago. The campus sits on 244 acres, and it's ranked number 82 in the 2024 edition of Best Colleges. Anything you'd like to add about the UIC or your department?
Yeah, sure. I can give a little plug for my department. So we offer degrees in bachelor's, master's, and PhD in chemical engineering. And then at the bachelor level, we also have concentration areas, and these include energy and the environment, nanotechnology, process automation, and entrepreneurship. And currently we have about 200 undergraduate students and about 60 graduate students. Our research funding in our department has grown about four times in the last 5 years, and we're working in areas such as sustainability, energy, pharmaceuticals, nanotechnology, food science, computational research, and also complex fluids.
That's pretty impressive. A degree in chemical engineering is not easy to earn. Tell us about the rigors of getting a degree.
Yeah, it's very difficult. And, you know, my students remind me that every day. So I'll give you kind of a little antidote here is if I go to a party or something and someone asks me what I do, say, I'm a professor. Oh, what are you a professor in? Chemical engineering. And you know, the first thing they say after that,
what?
Say, that sounds hard. And usually that's a conversation stopper. So yeah, it is hard. It's a lot of math. And, but once students are able to graduate with a degree, they have plenty of job opportunities. So it's really worth the effort, in my opinion.
Well, I've met a lot of chemical engineers that are trained in chemical engineering, but they seem to move on into the financial field, either investment bankers or some level of finance work. Why is that?
Well, I mean, like I said, it's a lot of math. So some of the smarter chemical engineers may realize they can make a lot more money with that math knowledge in finance than in chemical engineering. But I'm happy with thinking about these chemical engineering problems, and so I'm staying put in chemical engineering.
Well, we're happy we have smart people like you teaching a new young crop of chemical engineers. Let's talk a little bit about Renew. UIC is part of the multi-state partnership that creates a hub for research and economic development around water resources in the Great Lakes region. You are the co-lead on a selective separations, which focuses on extracting forever chemicals from the water. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yes.
And Renew is spelled capital R, little e, capital N, E, W. Is that an acronym or does Renew have a meaning?
Yeah, it is an acronym. And actually, I actually had to go back and look up what this meant because I thought you might ask that. Because once we create these acronyms, we just use them. We kind of forget what they mean. But the RE is recovering, recycling, something to that effect. And the NEW, new, is nutrients, energy, and water. So we're really focused on trying to recover nutrients, energy, and reusing water and getting all of this from mostly industrial wastewater. So kind of getting value out of waste.
Well, I also read that your tagline is turn waste into wealth. Sort of fits right into what you said. Exactly. Anything you wanted to add to that?
Just, I guess one thing is that, you know, it's this kind of paradigm's been, thrown around for a while. Even wastewater treatment plants are trying to change their name to get the waste out of there. And so we really need to like think about, as you know, water becomes shorter because of population growth and climate change and those sort of things, we have to think about ways that we can, you know, extract as much value out of our waste. It's really very critical as we move forward and population continues to grow. And, you know, as we have, climate change and shifts in population, we might get a lot of population moving from the arid Southwest when they run out of water to areas that are, you know, we think we're not going to run out of water, but, you know, things can change quickly and we need to be prepared for those changes that are on the horizon.
And as I mentioned in the intro, water is critical to a sustainable city. And so being able to conserve it and use it more wisely is very important. So let's get into a quick overview of the vision, the goals, what universities are involved, what private partners are involved, and how Renew is funded. So if you want to start out with the vision and goals.
Sure. Yeah, the vision, the overall vision of Renew is to invent new ways to extract valuable minerals and then remove toxic chemicals from wastewater. And then also what we're really focused on while doing this is creating a diverse workforce in the water industry. And, you know, in order to meet this vision, we have three overarching goals. The first is what we call use-inspired R&D. And so typically, the way research would be conducted in an academic institution is we would have an idea, we'd go investigate it, we'd find some, what we think, a breakthrough, and then we try to pitch it to industry. And what we often find out is we're not really solving a problem that's important to industry. So this idea of this use-inspired R&D is turning it on its head, where we really are collaborating tightly with industry to see what their problems are and how we can solve them. And so things that I kind of already mentioned, but you know, really what we're focused on these first 2 years is taking out forever chemicals from waste streams, but also recovering precious metals, lithium, and converting nitrogen to useful products. So that's the goal on the R&D side. For the workforce development, we want to train people for jobs in the water industry, as well as expose students to water-related career paths. And we want to try to do that as early as possible. So if, you know, not just at the college level, get into middle schools and try to at least get students excited about science and about water-related careers. And then lastly is translating innovations to practice. So this is, a goal of launching and investing in water startups. And we're trying to build centralized test beds in Chicago so that these startups have one place that they can test their products. And that can be very useful for cross-validation between technologies.
Well, I'm happy to hear that this is applied research-driven. Research funds have gotten scarce, maybe more scarce lately. So being able to direct those to commercialized ideas, I think, helps use dollars much more efficiently. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, this is a new initiative from NSF. So these engines, as they call them, they're really supposed to promote economic growth in regions. And yeah, I mean it's really important to be working closely with industry in order to make these breakthroughs. So yeah, it's very and so this is a really great opportunity. We've brought a lot of good institutions together, and we're really excited to get going on the work.
How is this funded?
This is funded through NSF. And this is, like I said, this is an inaugural engine. So they just started this program, and I think this is a really good way. This is a new program, like I said before, where they're focused on this use-inspired R&D, talking to industry, collaborating with them, knowing what the problems are, trying to solve those problems, and then trying to really get economic development. So it's a really a good new funding mechanism through NSF.
Well, let's get into your research because I find this very exciting. PFAS are known as the forever chemical because they never break down and they stay in the environment forever. What does the acronym PFA stand for?
Yeah, so PFAS is per- and polyfluoroalkyl alkyl substances.
That's why you're the smart professor.
Well,
What's that mean in English?
that's why we like to use acronyms. So, well, alkyl substance is just going to be a linear molecule. So you can think of it as a bunch of carbons, and carbons are, in this case, are either mostly or all the carbon atoms are surrounded by fluorines. And then they have some different functional head groups that differ between them. But there's thousands of these compounds. So there's a lot of different variations. But what they have in common are these carbon fluorine bonds. And this is what makes them very recalcitrant. This is what makes them not break down under natural processes because the carbon fluorine bonds are among the strongest known in nature. So it takes a lot of energy in order to break these bonds. And so if you would take PFAS and leave it in the water or soil and it's exposed to sunlight and microorganisms, it really does not break down. And that's how it got the term forever chemicals.
And why are those important for industry, and what are the different uses for them?
Well, the carbon fluorine bonds are very strong, so they're resistant to degradation from heat. So, many of us have had these non-stick pans in either in the past, hopefully mostly in the past, and not so much in the future. And the reason that they work well is because these carbon fluorine bonds are very resistant to breaking down under high temperatures when you're cooking, and they also give like non-stick coating. So they've been used for in a number of different applications. Anytime you want oil repellency, water stain resistance, non-stick coatings, oil and grease resistance, also firefighting applications. But they also make their way into a lot of personal care products. So they're in sunscreen, makeup, a number of products, carpeting. So stain resistance carpeting has a lot of these have coatings of that contain PFAS, and that can be problematic because as you would run on the carpet or walk on the carpet, they can air form small particles, and you can end up breathing them in. So that can be a fairly large exposure route.
They've stopped using PFAS in cookware. Why haven't they stopped using it in other applications?
Well, I think it's a slow process. I mean, a lot of I always say this to people is that a lot of people complain about these things, but they also probably complain about their life when they're removed because they make things a lot easier, right? They make cooking easier, they make washing clothes easier, and those sorts of things. So I think it takes time, and there really has to be pressure from the FDA or other agencies in order to take them out of these products. But I think we have some really good momentum. The EPA is moving on this, and the public is aware, and shows like yours make more and more people aware. So really public pressure, public awareness, that's really what can enact change.
Carbon and fluorine are everywhere. Why, what makes it so toxic?
Yeah, it's a good question. That's not my area of research, but from what I know, the actual mechanisms for toxicity are still being explored and not completely understood. But like kind of from a broader standpoint, anytime a new chemical is made, there's potential dangers because we haven't evolved with that chemical. So we don't have natural mechanisms to detoxify them from our bodies. And really the strength of these carbon fluorine bonds has made it so even like bacteria have not evolved to be able to biodegrade them. And so they also tend to bioaccumulate and then biomagnify up the food chain. So that's a problem because they can remain in the tissues of animals. And then as predators eat their prey, it accumulates in the tissue. And they have been linked to a number of disorders. I mean, the list goes on and on. And like I said, there's not a clear understanding to my knowledge of the exact mechanisms, but things like developmental issues, immune suppression, various cancers, thyroid disruption. Yeah, the list really goes on and on.
Typically, chemicals will migrate through pathways to get into the human and animal exposure, and that's typically water, soil, and air. How do these migrate?
Well, there's a few different ways. There's some direct discharge to groundwater, so that's a lot. A lot of that is from firefighting operations, and a lot of that's on Department of Defense sites because they use these to treat fires. But also, since they're present in so many different consumer products, they end up either going to the landfill or going directly into wastewater. And a lot of times the water that comes out of the landfill, called landfill leachate, also goes to the wastewater treatment plant. And wastewater treatment plants mainly operate using microbes to degrade the waste. And so these compounds basically go through the wastewater treatment plant, do not get treated, and a lot of times will either end up in the water or they end up in the biosolids. And the biosolids are used, they're land applied for agricultural applications, where they can then get into food or then run off into the water.
And as you said, they bioaccumulate, which is not good. A lot of times when you're dealing with contamination in water, the constituents can be reclaimed and maybe reused. How do you remediate PFAS, and can you reuse what you reclaim?
Well, PFAS is toxic at very low levels, and it's also present at very low levels. So to kind of put this in perspective, the EPA is throwing out a number of 4 nanograms per liter as a regulatory limit. And if you were to try to weigh out a milligram, that would be about a grain of salt. So this is a millionth of that size in a liter of water. So you can imagine they're very small. So the way to remove them, the easiest way to remove them is by some kind of absorption, like an activated carbon. And people might be familiar with like a Brita filter that operates on the same idea of having activated carbon. And so that's one way to remove them. And that seems to be a fairly promising way, but that doesn't destroy them. And then your question about reusing them, they're really present at such low levels that it's really not, it's not economically viable to try to reuse them.
And so you can filter those. What happens to the material that's filtered out?
Well, traditionally, activated carbon was used to absorb them onto the carbon, and then the carbon was combusted thermally. But then research has shown that the process leads to incomplete combustion, and then the PFAS get released back into the atmosphere on aerosol particles. And so, kind of to put this in perspective, this is maybe even almost a couple of decades ago. PFAS was found in the blood of polar bears in the Arctic. So, this process of combustion really circulated them throughout the globe.
So we get them migrating through the air, we get them migrating through water and soils or
exactly.
Sludge. Right. So that's, and they last forever. They don't break down naturally. Yeah, that's an issue. So this is a tough question maybe to answer, but when it comes to research, what do we know and what do we not know about PFAS? And what kind of research are you doing to answer what we don't know?
Sure. So in terms of the knowns, I guess there's substantial evidence that we can conclude that there's a health concern for PFAS. That's why we're acting on it. But as I mentioned earlier, the exact nature of their toxicity is unknown, and there's additional research ongoing there. In terms of trying to remediate them, we know that absorption-based treatment are effective for removing them from water. However, we're still trying to understand the exact processes of various other technologies that are being developed as we speak. And these are these destructive technologies. And so, for example, when we destroy the chemicals, we want to make sure we're not forming other things that are potentially toxic. And so that's very important when you have PFAS and you're developing a technology that you track all the intermediates and products that are formed from that process, because in many cases they can be just as toxic. And you know, there has been examples where a treatment process actually makes a water more toxic.
And part of this new blue economy is developing entrepreneurship and new technologies and new innovations. Speak to that. What kind of new technologies and innovations are being developed around PFAS?
Yeah, so right now we're looking for alternatives to the combustion process. And so some of the promising technologies are electrochemical oxidation. That's a technology that I'm researching. Others that I think are promising are UV-based treatment, plasma treatment, and hydrothermal alkaline hydrolysis. So these are all methods that you actually have to put quite a bit of energy in order to break these really strong carbon-fluorine bonds.
That sounds like a pretty expensive remediation technology. Do you look at costs at all?
Yeah, that's a big thing, is that we, you know, all these technologies that I mentioned are, they can feasibly remediate from a technical standpoint, they can destroy these compounds. But yeah, the economics are something that, you know, we're looking closely at. And really one of the key things for the economics is making the technology as energy efficient as possible. And what really affects that is having a non-selective treatment process. So when we're, for example, we do electrochemical oxidation in water, and probably 99% of our energy goes to splitting water, and only 1% goes to what we want it to do, is destroy the PFAS. So that's something we're working on, is trying to make the process more selective.
Well, every challenge presents an opportunity. What kind of investment opportunities are around the technology and the research you're working on?
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of industry and stakeholders are really concerned about this PFAS. So there is a lot of research in all these technologies that I mentioned, and it really has can have a huge impact. I mean, just one example that I mentioned with the wastewater sludge or biosolids, that's a very useful agricultural amendment. And if that is contaminated with PFAS, so if there's not a way to alleviate that, that could make, you know, a huge problem in that area. Like, what do we do with all the biosolids? That's where do we put them? And two, they were beneficial amendments for agriculture. So just that example alone, there's a huge economic incentive to trying to come up with a solution to PFAS.
You're producing some very educated, highly skilled students out there. What kind of job opportunities are there for them? And what kind of a pay range would they achieve?
Yeah, good question. So, I mean, the chemical engineering job market, it's growing, and I think it's projected to grow at about 10 to 15% in the next decade. And jobs in chemical engineering have been historically pretty tightly linked to manufacturing goods. But there's a lot of new directions in chemical engineering, and some of those are transitioning to low carbon energy systems, such as photovoltaics, sustainable food and water production, manufacturing with less waste and pollution. And also chemical engineers are relying more and more, and this is like most fields, on data science and artificial intelligence methods for things like process optimization, quality control, energy efficiency, material discovery, and so forth. So there's really lots of exciting new opportunities, and we're trying to educate students in those areas. Yeah, I don't have the average salary in the area, but I've had some students. These are PhD students that recently graduated, and you know, they're making almost as much as me. So there's an industry. So, and I've been at this for a long time. So it's definitely a good job, and if you can make it through the program, you're going to be rewarded.
Well, I'm sure it's hard to get people to go into that program and graduate because it is so rigorous. Brian, we covered a lot of ground in a short time. Is there anything else you'd like to add in closing?
No, I guess I want to thank you for doing this podcast. Like, as I said before, you know, getting the public informed in these issues is super important. And that's really how real change can be made. It's, you know, we can spend decades doing research in a lab, But if no one knows about it, it doesn't really do a lot of good. So yeah, the more people can know about these things and get excited about them, and then, you know, put pressure on their politicians when there's a problem and they want to see change, because that actually does work.
Brian, I think the sign of true intelligence is taking a complex idea and being able to explain it so the layman understands that. And you did a fantastic job. I really appreciate talking to you. I wish you the best of luck with your research and be happy to have you back on the show to get a progress report.
Yeah, sounds great. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, thank you so much for your time and telling us all about the important work you do keeping our water supply safe.
Yeah, thank you, Robert.
That's Dr. Brian Chaplin, a professor of chemical engineering at the University of Illinois Chicago and co-lead on the ReNew Research and Development focus area on PFAS. I'm Robert Colangelo. Thank you for listening to the Green Sense Show. Two very special people make it possible. A big thanks goes to Angela Surdy, our scheduler for booking guests, and Margaret Larkin, our audio producer and social media coordinator, for getting the show out. If you listen to the radio, check out the Green Sense Minute every Thursday and Saturday on 105.9 FM, WBBM, Chicago.
The Green Sense Show is brought to you by CEA Technology, a leader in building indoor growing systems that allow you to grow pesticide-free and conserve fertilizer, water, and energy to grow crops sustainably. Visit CEATECHN.com to learn more.